Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandra has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandra Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. We have a brilliant show today. Have you noticed I used to use the words great and amazing all the time. Somebody pointed out, would you use some different words? So I've got a whole list of wonderful and astonishing, magnificent words to use to describe our incredible shows that we have every week. And this week, we've got an interesting topic, an alternative to the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Dr. Joseph Farrell is gaining a lot of popularity out there, talking about some of the technology that the Nazis may have had that may have been developed into anti-gravitic craft that are flying around right now that perhaps the Americans picked up on Project Paperclip when they got all the German scientists. And essentially, he's saying that possibly Keksberg and Roswell were crashes of Nazi craft as opposed to extraterrestrial craft. So we're going to be talking a lot about that. To tell you more about Dr. Farrell, his doctorate is in patristics, which doesn't have much to do with the UFO arena. He got that at the University of Oxford. But since then, he has pursued research into physics, alternative history and science, and other strange stuff. He has several books, a few books called The Giza Death Star, which he started in 2002. These are alternative history and science, essentially talking about technologies that the ancients may have had. Of course, we all know Giza and some of the cool stuff there, and we all still wonder how the heck they built those pyramids. But of course, he's also printed several books on the Nazi secret weapons, and we'll be focusing on that end. I know there's a lot of history there. There's been some people in the chat already talking about some of that, so we'll be talking about these alternative theories. So this ought to be really interesting, and I know it's going to be educational for me. I have some information, well, quite a bit that I've looked into this stuff, but I still want to know more, and I know this is a guy to talk to find out more about this. Coming up for Open Minds Radio is a new time and location. We're going to be on at 7 p.m. starting 3 weeks from now on the 30th. Our guest will be Major Filer, so this is going to be a great one. George Filer, who does Filer Files, he had some amazing UFO experiences that got him involved with this stuff. Really cool, fun guy. So we'll be talking to him on our first extended show. It's going to be commercialless for the most part, except our own commercials. And it'll be longer, an hour and a half, kind of like those who have been listening to the show for quite some time, like the old UFO think tank show used to be. So a lot of you guys have been asking for, hey, we need longer shows, get it out with the commercials. But, I mean, hey, you got to make some money in order to do this stuff. So, but we listened, and we're going back to this format for you people. Other than that, of course, I've mentioned, and we'll probably have a commercial on it coming up, and that is the UFO Congress, which is going to be here in Arizona this year at the beautiful Fort McDowell Resort. You can find out more at ufocongress.com or openminds.tv. You can also, while you're there at openminds.tv, see the UFO headlines, because there's UFO stories in conventional media all of the time. And as usual, we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, to tell us about some of those stories. Jason, hello, my friend.
Greetings, Alejandro. Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, August 9th, 2010. In his new book, entitled UFOs in Water, author Carl W. Fine discusses the effects of UFOs on water, as the title indicates. Based on first-hand accounts, the book explores the impact UFOs have on bodies of water, the boats on the water, and the creatures living in the water. I'm fascinated by this topic, Alejandro, and it's interesting to see that there's more research being done into UFOs and water, or USOs, as they're sometimes called, unidentified submersible objects.
We had Debbie Ziegelmeyer on, MUFON dive team co-founder, and she was talking about how a large percentage of UFO sightings have to do with water. And I know Carl is very popular. He did some UFO files shows that were really popular, and people are always asking, what about those USOs, dude?
Right, so, the History Channel did a couple documentaries, and he was a part of those.
Yeah, they were great. So, and I've talked to him recently, and we're going to have him on the show now that he's got his book done. He wanted to focus on that in August. He said early September, he's there, dude. So we'll have him just a few weeks
That's
from now.
That's excellent. That's really exciting. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
Cool.
Nice guy. Funny guy.
Get ready for more UFO sightings. That's according to Professor Wang Sichao, a researcher of the Purple Mountain Observatory of the Chinese Academy of Sciences. 39 years of UFO research have led Professor Sichao to believe that more major UFO sightings occur in years ending in the numbers 1, 2, and 7. That would make 2011 and 2012 the years to keep your eyes to the skies, if Professor Sichao is correct. He also suggests that the best months to observe UFOs are July and August, and after 10 p.m. So, Alejandro, I guess that means that next year, in July and August, we need to do the radio show outside.
Yeah, a year from now, it is on. And, of course, being out here in Arizona, we're going to have to figure out some way to keep us cool while we're out there, other than alcohol, because, of course, you know, you don't want people to say, oh, you were drinking beers and... You know, that's why you saw UFOs.
There are funny people here in Arizona who have outdoor air conditioners.
Really?
Yes.
We'll have to borrow one.
We could have a nice setup.
Yeah.
But it's after 10 p.m. We'd have to change the time of the show, and I don't think guests would like that.
Oh, that's true.
Another batch of UFO files was released last week from the UK National Archives, and what seems to be getting the most attention is a letter that alleges a cover-up by Winston Churchill. This letter was from a physicist and grandson of one of Churchill's bodyguards and was inquiring about an incident from World War II where a UFO allegedly shadowed a plane returning from a mission. The pilots even managed to take pictures of the object. The letter writer's grandfather, a Royal Air Force officer, supposedly overheard Churchill speaking about the incident with Dwight Eisenhower, who at the time was the U.S. commander of the Allied forces. So concerned over mass panic, Churchill ordered the incident to remain secret for 50 years. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I heard from my mom who heard this, and so it's kind of second hand, but...
And third hand and fourth hand. It's pretty far down the line, but...
But actually, you know, on the site of the UK Files, they promote a guy's book, Dr. David something rather. I forget his name. But he's a very conservative. Usually he's kind of a spokesperson. He actually said of this account, it rings true, and he thinks it's probably true.
And this isn't the only thing that's been mentioned about Churchill in these files that have been released.
This is an older story, but it's essentially, this is the funny part. They told this guy essentially, well, all of the records prior to 67 were burned because the people didn't have any interest in them. And he said, anyway, Churchill has already disclosed what he felt about UFOs. And essentially they're referring to this document where Churchill asked about UFOs. He was given a document that totally debunked UFOs and said, there's nothing to worry about, Mr. Churchill, sir. And that's the document they're referring to. And that's the one that also came out in a set of files about a year ago, made a lot of news.
There's always interesting stuff in the files that the British are releasing, though.
A lot of interesting stuff. We got more at the website about that.
Theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking has more advice for humans. Move to space. He predicts that if we can't find another planet to inhabit, then humans will become extinct. Because of natural resource depletion and because of the aggressive nature of humans, Hawking feels that our only chance for long-term survival is to spread out into space. Back in April, Hawking also advised against humans trying to contact extraterrestrial life because he feels extraterrestrials will likely raid our planet. If you think Stephen Hawking is onto something here, and you'd like to move to space, you might want to get started packing, because with current technology, it will take you 50,000 years to reach the nearest star.
Wow, that's a long time. So you wouldn't get very far. You would get, like, just down the street, and then it's over.
Well, we'll see with Virgin Galactic and these other private companies developing new propulsion systems. That's the key right there.
Well, I hope whatever they come up with is not as dreary and ugly as Battlestar Galactica, the latest show. I mean, it was a good show, but who would want to live on this ugly-looking freight? It's like a dump truck in space. Pretty ugly and dreary. Hopefully they come up with something pretty and shiny.
Although the
like the old Battlestar wasn't bad.
Okay. Well, you should voice your opinion in that.
Yeah. I'm going to write Bigelow.
Multiple UFO sightings were reported recently in the UK. Several Colchester residents reported seeing objects in the sky, but the sightings appeared to be of different objects. One witness described something that looked like a huge balloon moving across the sky. Another witness described something twice as big as the sun and fiery on all edges. And another resident was sitting outside and saw a round disc in the sky. There's always a lot of UFO activity in the UK, it seems.
Oh, the UK. I think, you know, when I was posting the news today, I think every single story was from the UK. I mean, they've got, maybe it's just that they're more apt to post it, but so many sightings that they're reporting out there. And it's a much smaller place than the United States.
Well, and if this is how many sightings they're getting now, just imagine next year in July and August.
Holy moly, next couple of years is going to be crazy in the UK.
2011, 2012. That's what Professor Wang Fichao says.
Yep, if Wang is right.
That's right.
We'll see.
Exciting times. Sightings are crazy. And, you know, as Nick Pope has said before, the former Ministry of Defense UK guy taking all of these reports, the reports are just off the charts right now.
Yeah. That's what's funny about the UK just not too long ago saying they're closing their department to investigate or to even take UFO reports, essentially saying if you want to report a UFO sighting, talk to somebody else, not us. Because they said there wasn't much interest, there wasn't much showing any national security problems. Yet, it's in the midst of the busiest reporting that's ever happened before. And like you mentioned in those files, there's a case of a pilot, a commercial plane, having a near miss with a giant triangular craft. That's not a security issue?
Right. The illustration of that is really cool, by the way.
Yeah, that new site did a good job.
That's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed.
Thank you, Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan. Speaking of which, like I said, we have a lot more of those UFO case files from the UK on our website and what's going on there. A bunch of cool stories this week, so check them out. We'll be back after this break with Dr. Joseph Farrell, Nazi UFOs. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. I did want to mention also some exciting news. I know some of you who subscribe to the magazine have been saying, where's my magazine? Because usually the August issue is out just prior to August. But we're doing the August issue actually in August. So it should be hitting the newsstand hopefully this week, if not next week. And you should have gotten it in the mail if you're a subscriber. If not, you'll get it any second now. And you'll notice it because it's got this incredible image of an extraterrestrial on the cover, something our creative department did. Eric McFarlane, an incredible artist that works for us, did a great job with that. So you'll see that. It's an exciting issue, too, because it's about alien abductions and some very credible, some of the science and hard work that's been done by some of the best researchers out there on that. Speaking of one of the best researchers, I hear a lot about the Nazi UFOs and Dr. Farrell's work, so I'm excited to have you on the show, sir. Hello there.
Hi, Alejandro. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, thanks for being on. This is a pretty hot subject these days. And there's a lot, and it'll be interesting to talk to you about, you know, a lot of possible mythology about what went on with the Nazis and the occultist groups and all of that. But essentially, just getting right to the heart of it, if I'm not correct, you feel that Kecksburg and Roswell were probably crashes of Nazi technology?
Well, let me put it very bluntly and briefly. In the case of Roswell, yes, I do. I have a book out called Roswell and the Reich that is a fairly extensive review of all the research on the Roswell case and then my own examination of the Nazi technology in connection with it. As for Kecksburg, the case there is slightly different, Alejandro, because what we're dealing with are a set of data points between the Kecksburg crash, what crashed at Kecksburg, and a Nazi technology called the Bell. And let me briefly run over what the data points are.
Great.
In the case of the Bell, we're dealing with an object that is bell-shaped, that has dimensions of about 9 to 12 feet wide, about 15 to 18 feet tall. In the Kecksburg case, we're dealing with a similarly shaped object with similar dimensions. In the case of the Bell, we're dealing with a device that had to be tested when it was tested underground in a room lined with ceramic bricks that was covered with rubber mats. In the case of the Kecksburg Acorn, we're dealing with a device that allegedly was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Base, where a fellow by the name of Myron that worked for a local construction company was to take an order of ceramic bricks to this particular hangar where this device had been stored. So we're dealing with, in the latter case with Kecksburg, we're dealing with a number of data points that, to my mind, stack up to a coincidental resemblance, and I put coincidental in quotation marks, with a resemblance between the two objects that suggests very strongly, to my mind, that what we have there is a crash of some sort of Nazi-based technology, yes.
Gotcha. And let's focus on the Bell at first for a minute.
Sure.
This was a device. Do you believe that this was something that was definitely a working model was built?
Oh, yes, definitely. And let me clarify what I believe this was. This was a prototype or a gateway technology that was to have led the Nazis to three different things, the first being an access to the energy of the vacuum, and the second would be to a field propulsion technology, or as we would also call it, an anti-gravity technology. And then the third thing they, of course, you know, Nazis being Nazis, the third thing that they were looking for is a technology that would lead them to a kind of a doomsday weapon. So those are the three things. Now, it's important for me to stress one aspect here, and that is that this device, according to the various testimonies that we have from an SS general that was connected with it, the device gave off such deadly, deadly field effects that it was not, by the end of World War II, a practical field propulsion technology. In other words, they had made certain breakthroughs, to be sure, but we can't say that this is a breakthrough to the extent that this was something that, you know, people could climb into and fly
right.
around.
Without getting fried. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I was done.
Okay. So, okay, that's an interesting point then, that they built a prototype, but not something that could be manned and something that was extremely dangerous, this technology.
Yes. Well, again, I want to stress another point about this technology that's related or associated with the Bell. I am not saying, on the other hand, that the Nazis did not have some rather advanced saucer-type technology. However, mm-hmm. in that case, what we're dealing with, if you look at the record very carefully, what we're dealing with is saucer-shaped aerodynes that were more or less advanced jet turbines. That's basically all they were.
Gotcha.
So we're dealing with the Bell with something far, far beyond anything like that. But they did have these other technologies, certainly, by the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. So, and the people that worked on the Bell, is it possible, or do you have knowledge that those people, those scientists, then did come to work in the United States under Paperclip?
Well, that's another very, very interesting and important question. Toward the end of the war, the SS murdered 60 of the scientists that were involved with this project. The others went to different places. And the argument of Igor Vitkovsky and Nick Cook is basically that the project came to this country. I absolutely and strongly disagree, because in my books, particularly in a book called The Nazi International, I outlined the case that the Bell Project itself and one of its leading scientists actually went to Argentina, where the Nazis continued to work on this project after the war. And that's a very significant thing, and I hope your listeners appreciate the significance of it. Because what that means is you're dealing after the war with an organized, so to speak, extraterritorial Nazi state that is actually continuing to conduct its secret research independently of any of the Allied powers that won World War II. And it also implies that they have a degree of organization and sophistication and financial backing to carry out that research. And I realize that's kind of a whopper of a statement to make, but that's basically the case that I outline in the Nazi International.
It's certainly worthy of some follow-up questions there. So where would the Nazis have gone to, or do you know where they might have gone to continue their work?
Oh, I can tell you exactly where that project was continued. It was continued in an area in Rio Negro province of Argentina, which is centered around a town called San Carlos de Bariloche, which is approximately 900 miles, I guess you'd say, south-southwest of Buenos Aires. So it's in a very remote region of Argentina. It's close to the Andes Mountains and the border of Chile. The project itself that I'm thinking about was conducted on Waymo Island, which is just across the lake there near San Carlos de Bariloche. You can still see the ruins of the laboratories where this project was conducted. So, you can pinpoint rather exactly where it went. The project was shut down by Juan Perón in 1951 under some rather peculiar circumstances. But I believe that the nutshell, the bottom line, is that the Nazis simply moved the project elsewhere, and we really don't know where they moved it to, probably somewhere in Latin America, but it's anybody's guess where.
Yeah, that's interesting because, Argentina has a history of sightings.
Oh, yes.
We've written something about that, and I've had on a couple of people even recently, Ruben Uriarte and one of our writers, Antonio Junez, on talking about that. And that would make sense because we know a lot of Nazis went to Argentina.
Oh, yes, definitely. And it's important to stress here again that it's not just your run-of-the-mill Nazis. There were some very top-notch scientists that went to Argentina and continued these projects, one of them being, in fact, Reinhard Horten, who worked for Juan Perón and built some rather sophisticated and advanced jets for the Argentine Air Force. So, yeah, it's a very, very big story. It's almost completely unknown in this country.
Yeah, that's really interesting. In fact, I know, Antonio talks a lot about it in Argentina and Chile, a lot of German blood that's down there. So, I mean, it changed how people look down there.
Yes, absolutely, particularly in the southern regions of those two countries, absolutely so.
Great. So we're going to talk more about this. This is all super extremely interesting, and got some people in the chat who have some interesting questions as well.
Sure.
So that's all coming up right after this break. You're listening to Open Minds Radio, and we're talking about Nazi technology. So stay tuned.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome back. We're talking about Nazi UFOs on Open Minds Radio. A real interesting topic. I started thinking about my next question before I had finished talking about what I was saying. But I wanted to ask you then, I guess if we moved into 1965, when Kecksburg happened, I mean, I guess that could possibly then be evidence that the projects you mentioned in Argentina did continue somewhere.
Yes, I think so. And it's very interesting that you asked that question, because one of the most interesting things to me, Alejandro, is when the Kecksburg acorn is tracked, if you plot the track, it comes from Canada, kind of on a northwest to southeast track. It comes down over the Michigan Peninsula and then down into Ohio, where I believe certain witnesses see this thing stop, and then it changes course and crashes eventually, of course, outside of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And it's always been interesting to me because there's been persistent rumors. I haven't been able to verify them, but there have been persistent rumors in some of the literature that the Germans had some sort of base somewhere in the wilds of the Canadian Arctic. So, you know, it's another little weird connection.
Well, speaking of rumored bases, one of the chat people had mentioned that they say it's well known on Long Island that there's some sort of Nazi scientist base on Plum Island, New York.
Well, that I'm not familiar with. There have always been rumors that there was some sort of Nazi connection to the Montauk Project. But, you know, the mythology surrounding the Montauk Project has become so weedy and overgrown, it's kind of hard to separate fact from fiction. But as for Plum Island, I don't know anything about that, to be honest with you.
Well, I guess I was going to ask about Roswell, but we can put that on hold a sec, because another question I wanted to ask about was some of the kind of hazy mythology around this subject, that people in different secret societies had actually channeled the Nazi technology from Aldebaran and some of these mythologies.
Mm-hmm. That has been a persistent mythology, and I mention that. In fact, I discuss it at some length in my book called The SS Brotherhood of the Bell. Excuse me. And one of the problems I have with this, Alejandro, is that, number one, you do not need extraterrestrials or channeled information to rationalize the physics or the technology that the Nazis were working on with this device. In fact, I lay out in Secrets of the Unified Field, I lay out what I believe to have been the physics papers and, incidentally, the engineering basis behind what their thinking was. You simply don't need channeled information. The other problem that I have with that story is that the story began to be circulated after the war and within a very narrow circle of neo-Nazis that were gathered in and around Vienna and Munich in Germany. So, you know, I have to question the source, because that particular circle of people were, on the one hand, letting out information, but on the other hand, trying to misdirect people's attention away, I think, from the actual basis of this technology.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of debate that, you know, some of these sources of information were supposed to come from a real society, and
yes,
and like you and I tried to look into it, it's debated whether they existed at all.
Well, actually, the Vril Society did exist. There was a pamphlet, I have a copy of it, as a matter of fact. There was a pamphlet published by that society in Berlin in 1935. And the other testimony to its existence actually comes from the German rocket scientist Willy Ley that came over to this country prior to the war. So, you know, you've got the pamphlet, you've got one of these German rocket scientists that said it existed. But there the evidence trail ends. There is no solid evidence that I have found yet that can corroborate this story that someone in that society channeled information from Aldebaran. I have not been able to corroborate that beyond the source that actually published it.
Okay, got you. Thanks. Thanks for clearing that up. Then getting on to Roswell, you talked about the Nazi disc technology was jet turbine powered. So is that what you believe crashed in Roswell?
I believe it is something very similar to that. And the reason why is one of the documents that the Roswell researchers themselves have relied on through the years is the so-called Shulgin collection, intelligence collection memo that General Shulgin of the Air Force Intelligence promulgated. I think it was in September of 1947. And if you read the context, if you read the internal evidence of the document very, very closely and carefully, you'll discover that the context for it is precisely the Roswell crash. Now, the document exists in two versions. Most of the Roswell researchers cite it in an unauthentic, faked version, where the actual text of the document has been altered to suggest an extraterrestrial origin for the craft. In its original form, there is no mention of any of that. There is mention of things like a roaring sound, like exhaust coming from some of these craft, and so on and so forth. And the final clincher for me is the clear statement within this document that the ultimate origin of this technology is precisely Nazi Germany. So the Air Force knew, in my opinion, exactly what they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And you think then this is possibly one of those underground Nazi programs?
Yeah, I do. And the reason why, that's another excellent question. The reason why is the only way that I personally can rationalize the kind of panic that you see the military going into as a result of Roswell isn't because that they have recovered something extraterrestrial. They've recovered something Nazi. Now, you know, put yourself in the political position of the U.S. military 2 years after the end of World War II and the so-called defeat of the Nazi Party. If something Nazi crashes in Roswell, then you really do have something that's going to send them into kind of a tailspin. They're going to cover this up because, for one thing, it's politically very, very hot. You know, you don't want to admit that these people are out there somewhere, that they're continuing this research and flying around our skies with impunity.
That's
just not a story you want to get out there.
So then what about some of the testimony to bodies being actually recovered out there in Roswell?
Well, this is another problem with the whole Roswell story, and I get into this whole, you know, Roswell and the Reich, the book that just came out this year, it's a 525-page book. It's a very thorough kind of historical review of the actual research that's been done on the case.
Where's the best place for people to go purchase that?
The best place would be either Adventures Unlimited Press, the publisher that publishes it. They do have a toll-free number. It's 1-800-458 or something like that, 415-7418. They'll have to look it up.
I'll look it up here real quick for you.
I can't remember right offhand. The other place they can get it, of course, would be online at Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble, places like that. But in any case, getting back to the bodies, my problem with the body story is twofold. Number one, it's not originally a part of the Roswell story. It takes approximately 30 years for that aspect of the story to come forward. And the second part of the problem for me has always been that, with the exception of two witnesses who are now impeached by the Roswell extraterrestrial proponents themselves, those two witnesses alone described physiological features that would compel to the conclusion that the bodies that were recovered were not human. So what we're left with, without these two impeached witnesses, what we're left with is a body of witnesses who, if you look at the details of what they're describing small bodies. In many cases, they'll say they look like 10 to 12-year-old children with large heads and so on and so forth. But if you look at the descriptions of these bodies, there's nothing in them physiologically to compel to the conclusion that they're actually extraterrestrial. And in fact, I think Nick Redfern made a very good case that what they were describing may have been something very similar to progeria syndrome. So I'm not convinced even on the bodies that we're dealing with something extraterrestrial.
Okay, and then Jesse Marcel, I guess, and his statement, do you think that the technology in these German discs was so foreign that they wouldn't be able to recognize it?
No, on the contrary. I think that if, again, you look at the documents very carefully that are associated with the Roswell case, whether or not you agree with the Magic 12 documents as being authentic or perhaps a bit of contrived disinformation, and if you look at the authentic documents, the Twining memo to General Shulgin, if you look at General Shulgin's intelligence collection memo, which are certainly both authentic documents, it is very clear when you read these documents that the Air Force is very, very, very carefully trying to dance around the Nazi technology issue, but it's very clear that they know where this stuff comes from.
Someone in the chat asked then, why are they still trying to keep the Nazi secret?
Because, for one thing, it's politically explosive. To this day, to admit that there was an extraterritorial Nazi state capable of carrying on research after the war, that's politically explosive in and of itself. Because the implication is that they might be continuing to this day to do so. You see, that's the problem. The second problem is, I think, a technological one. I think when you get right down to it, most of this technology that we did get our hands on is clear indicator enough that the Air Force would have wanted to develop it and maintain secrecy around it. So I think that's one reason.
The other reason is
part of the technology, the creme de la creme of the Nazi technology, which is represented by the Bell, we did not get our hands on. And that is another reason for keeping all of this secret.
Okay, I want to follow up with that after this break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
All right. Thanks for coming back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio, and we're talking about Nazi technology. Very interesting show. And I've got to apologize to one of my coworkers, Michael Stratt, who had some questions, and I forgot his list of questions. Sorry, Michael, but if you're listening, which I'm sure he is, call in 602-277-5369, 602-277-5369, and you can ask your questions. If you're not in town, you're listening on the chat or something, you can call it 1-866-536-1100. Now, before the break, you were talking about the fear that somebody else got the Nazi technology. Who would that be?
Well, I don't think somebody else got it. I think it remained in Nazi hands. That's the whole argument I've been advancing through several of my books. And again, it hinges around the fact that this Bell device, the Bell technology itself, which represents the very pinnacle of Nazi research and technological development, this device remained in their hands, and the aspects of physics that they were investigating with it, they continued to investigate independently, using Argentina as kind of a front. So I think this technology remained in more or less independent hands, and the Allies and the Soviet Union got all the basically got the crumbs from the table.
Yeah, some ideas that the Russians were able to develop something with the Nazis that they had stolen away from Germany, but there doesn't seem to be much indication of that, does there?
Well, there is some indication that I get into in SS Brotherhood of the Bell concerning some of their late-war radar experiments and a principle that the Germans stumbled onto in those experiments called phase conjugation, which is a very, very important principle in terms of modern physics. And the Russians did get a hold of that radar team at the end of the war. Now, what they did is what they did with all of the rocket technicians that they got from Nazi Germany. They used them to seed their own technological development. And when they were done with these technicians, they simply expatriated them back to Germany or wherever they went. And in the case of the leader of this radar team, it turns out that he went to Brazil after the war and did similar work for the Brazilian government.
So interesting.
I think you have a case that can be made that this man, his name was Dr. Richard Hellman, I think the case can be made that he probably re-entered this post-war Nazi International and did some work for that group of people in Latin America.
Well, Lord knows we certainly took advantage of our project, Paperclip Scientists, where our entire space program is based off of their work on the V2 and Wernher von Braun and his whole group out there.
Right.
So do you feel that then, one of the things you had mentioned, that the Americans have built on this technology as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it's very clear. And let me get into some of the reasons why. When the Bell project that was continued in Argentina was eventually kind of inadvertently exposed by Juan Perón, what happened was the scientist in charge was placed under house arrest, where he remained in Buenos Aires. But the U.S. Air Force, about 2 years later, this would place it circa 1954, the U.S. Air Force, in his project paperclip files, which I reproduce in the Nazi International, got a hold of this man secretly and interviewed him secretly. And it's very interesting because right about this same time, if you have been following the research of Nick Cook, anti-gravity discussion disappears in the open literature. And it's also at about this same time that the American physicist Thomas Townsend Brown pitched his project Winter Haven project to the United States Navy, which of course was nothing but a project in anti-gravity. So I think we have a clear indicator that the Air Force in this country was reacting to the fact that this man down in Argentina had continued all of this advanced research, and we did not have it. So I think there's
got. Gotcha. So that's when our technology began after.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that there was a direct seeding of this field propulsion Nazi technology into American industry. I do think that there was a reaction, a perceptible reaction on the part of the Air Force to create our own homegrown version of it.
Gotcha. So then if you feel that there's this Nazi contingency that continues to this day, do you think they are still more advanced than perhaps what the Americans have?
Well, let me put it to you this way. The Nazi International after World War II was literally awash with cash. And they moved a lot of this at, I think, probably a very heavy price tag into Western banks in London and New York, and essentially laundered that money. So I think you have to look at the potential now of some 60-plus years since the end of World War II, and the fact that you have an organization that's awash with money, that was certainly capable of pursuing its independent research after the war, and extrapolate from that what the possibilities might be.
Gotcha. Interesting. So, and why do you think then some of the other governments of the world would put up with the Nazis continuing?
Well, for one thing, that's kind of a twofold question. If you go back to the period immediately after World War II, the reason would be it's simply impossible at that point in history to figure out exactly where all of this stuff flying around our skies is coming from. I'm sure that they had a good idea, but, you know, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, those are fairly large regions of the globe. So it would be very difficult for them to have pinpointed with any exactitude in the days prior to satellites and so on and so forth where this stuff was coming from. In modern times, I think we're dealing with something different, because I think you have to look again at the track record of this post-war Nazi organization. It was very, very adept at penetrating and ingratiating itself with Western intelligence agencies and offering its services for some of their clandestine black operations. So I think the other part of the problem is to expose it is really to, as far as the Western powers are concerned, is really to weaken their ability to gather intelligence and to conduct these covert ops.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it's kind of a handshake type of thing. Well,
yeah, exactly.
The big question, and some of the people, of course, are asking in the chat, is do you believe any of what we – do you believe in the extraterrestrial hypothesis?
Yes, I do. I'm not philosophically opposed to it. However, I want to make very clear, I am not a ufologist. My interest is not to prove or disprove extraterrestrials. My interest is solely in the arguments that can be advanced for advanced human technology. I'm certainly not opposed philosophically to the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Well, you know, one of the things when I saw your information when you started coming out, I thought ufology would be really kind of upset and by it and, you know, not treat it well. But it seems like just the opposite, that you've been well accepted. I always hear good things about you from the community. Do you feel that you have been attacked by ufologists at all?
Well, not so much attacked, but ignored. It's an interesting question, actually, and I really haven't reflected on it, to be honest with you, before this. But I have been invited to UFO conferences.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, of course, was the year that Roswell and the Reich came out. And you know, it challenges a fundamental part of the extraterrestrial creed,
yeah,
so to speak. And the silence from the ufology community thus far to that book has been almost overwhelming. It's been deafening. There's been one or two little reviews here and there, but the reviews don't really amount to much of a review of the book, but more kind of a subtle attack on me. But I you know, it's hard to gauge what the reception now of mm-hmm. the ufology community to me is.
Well,
kind of...
Michael wrote our review on your book for our magazine coming up here,
uh-huh.
and I know he loves your work so and your book, so you definitely can look forward to a good review there.
Well, that's good.
And interesting enough, a Roswell local this year at the Roswell Festival kind of spoke about this subject, and I didn't get to see his talk, unfortunately. Hopefully I'll get to see it soon, but he talked about kind of some of the work that you've done. Well, I'm glad I got that question in because I just got the signal we're almost out of time. It is Adventures Unlimited Press. Where you could get the book. The phone number is 815-253-6390, and they carry a few of your other books, right?
Yeah, they carry most of my books, as a matter of fact, and they even carry my books that have been published by another publisher, so they can certainly hook people up with them.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being
thank
on the
you.
Show. We'll have to have you on again where I can get through Michael's questions.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Alejandro.
Thank you. All right, next week on the show, we got great George Lobono, and it's a little bit different. We'll be talking ETs the whole time. He's got a show called Alien Mind, The Thought and Behavior of Extraterrestrials. So that's what we'll be talking about next week, so you're definitely going to want to join us, and we'll be right here on Open Minds Radio. Still 9 o'clock, still on KFNX. So be here, people. Talk to you later.